Welcome, ladies and gents. Welcome to another episode of Watchers in the Basement, where the ex that you jilted at the altar could pop up on you at any moment. welcome. I'm Tristan.
I'm Marcy.
All right, we're going to talk about episode 7 of 1923, a Yellowstone original or prequel. Episode 7, The Rule of 500. This was a good episode. Marcy, let's start with you. Like, what did you think about the episode as a whole?
It was good. You know, a lot of things happened, but there wasn't a lot of action. So I was like, okay, it's a pretty good episode. And those last 15 minutes, I was like, holy shit. Like, all of the things are happening now. So I was cheering at the end, and then I was like, no, and then my jaw dropped at the very end. So it was a really good episode.
All right. So let's talk about, what were your highlights of this episode, as a whole, just in general?
I think my highlights are definitely knowing just kind of more of what happens to Tiana, just because we know obviously what happened wasn't a highlight. More Spencer and Alex, although they weren't on camera a lot, we didn't see a lot of them. What happened at the end was a big highlight. And then just getting to see more of Jake, more of Harrison Ford, just kind of being more of a badass and just kind of kicking ass.
Yeah, we could start with Jake, Jacob Dutton, actually, Harrison Ford's character. I think a lot of this episode was Jacob just kind of striking this balance between taking like this big picture view about how to protect the family, protect the ranch, while also kind of wrestling with like the very nature of like the world that they're in, the Dutton family as a whole, which is, you know, vengeance and taking care of business in a violent way. Mm-hmm. What did you think about this tug of war between Jacob, not just Jacob and himself, but Jacob and Kara, right? Who clearly has a path that she wants him to take in order to save his family.
I think definitely what she is saying to him and what she said to him in the previous episodes, I think that has really resonated with him, even though she may not think it has, right? Like, he decided, okay, like, if you told the sheriff about the situation, now I'm going to work with the sheriff to figure out how we can bring Banner to justice in a way that's actually going to be within the law. And also, it's not going to upset Kara, because it's not, you would think it's not going to bring upon more violence. So I love the way that they have a real partnership, right? Like, he actually listens. They may argue back and forth sometimes, and they may struggle to see each other's point, but at the end, it's evident, like in all of the other episodes, that he really respects her opinion. And it's just interesting to see in the different scenes that we see them in, whether it's when Jake is leaving that morning before they go arrest Banner, or after he's come back and they're all around the dinner table talking about different topics and talking about politics. So it's just really cool to see just kind of the back and forth between them, and that she doesn't back down, right? She's not a wife from back then that's just like, okay, well, Jacob, whatever you say goes, because you are the husband and the man. No, she really shares her opinion and she doesn't back down.
And I think Kara Dutton is starting to rub off on Elizabeth, because, you know, we're starting to see like some of that kind of inner cowgirl, inner cowboy's wife. Like, she's not just, you know, docile, you know, as Jack just kind of parades about. Like, she is becoming a more and more adept at like speaking her mind and just putting her foot down, especially with Jack, who, you know, clearly the show wants us to see is like, you know, immature, you know, a little bit. Even though his heart's in mind, it might be in the right place, but he's, you know, young and immature, just doesn't know about a lot of things. All right. So I like how the show kind of positions her as kind of like grounding Jack a little bit. And we see that, you know, so But no, I totally agree with Jacob and Kara. What did you think about the politics scene? I thought it was funny, like how, you know, Jacob is kind of going on. He and Jack are going back and forth about political issues of the day. Mm-hmm. And, you know, both women end up mad at him. Like, what did you think about that scene?
I really like that scene first because it's kind of where we see the no politics at the dinner table that the Duttons still kind of uphold to this day. Like, okay, that was instituted by Kara because, you know, these things happened. It was interesting to hear them just kind of argue about some of the things that were going on back then and still seeing how some of those things can resonate now when they were talking about, okay, so they're going to have a committee that is going to regulate mining, but then you have people from the mining industry on these committees, where is kind of like the fairness in that? Can you really hold people to account if you know, you're self-regulating yourself? So I loved to see, again, how some of these same themes that were relevant 100 years ago are still relevant in some way now. And again, them holding their own, right? Like Kara was able to share her perspective on it and then she shut it down. But I think it was also an interesting point that Jake made, you know, when Jack said, oh, you know, you've gone and made her mad. And he said, no, she's not mad. She's scared. I really think that he's able to pick up on those very subtle things that his wife is doing and saying, and I think that just comes with being, you know, in a relationship for so long with somebody.
Yeah, I mean, like that absolutely also kind of mirrors the chemistry on screen between Harrison Ford and Helen Mirren. Like, you really think that they're a married couple, right? Yeah. And the fact that he knows that she's scared just kind of goes back to like this overall theme that's been permeating throughout the season, which is like this progress. Mm-hmm. And, you know, we could look at progress totally different ways. Like, I think Whitfield thinks he's doing the right thing, right? By trying to grab this land and so, you know, expand his empire. And, you know, everybody in this thinks they're doing the right thing, or they think their way is the way that things should go, like going forward. And like this, we just keep seeing this tug between what we consider as progress and innovation in like this traditional way of life. Tiana, like we meet back up with Tiana. Actually, her father comes to the house where his mother lived and finds her dead. From what happened the previous episode with the two I guess policemen, law officers, whatever you calling them. And then we see what happens to, so the priests, you know, they abduct, who's the young man that was Hank's son,
Hank Jr., I think is his name. Jr.
So they priests come and abduct Hank Jr. and, you know, basically take him away. Tiana's dad, finds the priest and Hank Jr. kills the priest. Before we get to what happens at the end of that particular section of the episode, how do you feel about where we've gone? We've come so far with Tiana's character, with her arc so far.
Oh, that's a great question. It's hard to say because it's been such a violent depiction that we've seen and such a violent like arc that she has had to go through. So on one side, it's been difficult to really see it, understanding that it's important to show those things that happened back then, the violence that was inflicted, seeing it, and then kind of seeing even when she's trying to escape, things aren't really going her way. We think they might go her way, but then again, still more violence, more heartache, more loss. But at least she's not at the residential school anymore. Now she's quote unquote free, but she's still having to go through all of these things. So for me, it's just kind of difficult to just watch this whole arc. And I think we know from what we know about Rainwater that it's probably not going to get any easier, right? I think we know that Rainwater wasn't even raised by his family. He was raised by another family, and he thought he was Mexican for most of his life. So I want to see what happens next. I want to see maybe like some type of happiness in her life. But I think just being realistic, probably not just going to like become all flowers and sunshine after, you know, she reunites with her dad.
I would find it very disappointing if her arc, if like all the pain we've seen in her arc was only used in service of like somebody else's storyline.
Yeah.
Or like some, you know, normally we see in show, in entertainment, where we see women go through like all this, you know, deep pain, violent, sexual, you know, all the, you know, the different types of abuse. It's all is usually in service of like some other man, like to show, hey, this person is rehabilitated or whatever. Like, and I want to see Tiana win in some type of way, whatever that looks like. But I am interested in like where this goes, right? Like, if it's, yeah, like you said, I don't see some happily ever after pie in the sky type arc for her outside of this season. But like, I really want to know like what. How they're going to tie in her significance to like the major plot line. I saw one theory online, reading around today, that we may see the gesture that the Duttons did pay the natives by giving them the sheep.
Mm-hmm.
Maybe that comes back in some type of way. Hopefully. Okay. Right. So like, you know, just kind of seeing some type of collaboration between the natives and the Duttons, you know, maybe they end up with common enemies or some type of way. So I am interested in seeing where her arc goes. But let's talk about the end of this. So Tiana. So there's what two of the other two priests. You know, they run up, come up on where her and Hank are going. Let's rewind. I think it was last episode. We talked about like the potential, you know, danger for Hank, but and there we are. So yeah, they kill Hank. Tiana ends up, you know, killing both priests, honestly. What did you think about that scene? And again, where does that kind of fit into where we think Tiana's going the rest of the season and beyond?
Yeah. No, I think, sadly, again, as part of this very violent storyline that she has, there's a lot of collateral damage too, right? Like, even before Hank is killed, we see that the priests catch up with Hank Jr. and they're beating him and they try to drag him back to the reservation or to the residential school. Awesome scene where Hank Jr. is talking to that other priest, where he's talking about, you know, you are uncivilized and I've done missions in all these other third world countries and now they're thriving because we've brought them Jesus and that's why they're thriving. You know, so there's that whole back and forth, and then Tiana's dad shows up and is like, you are not about to kill Hank Jr., and comes up from behind and scalps him and cuts his throat. I'm not like a person that loves watching violent things, but I was in bed like cheering. I was watching this at probably like 9 o'clock in the morning. I was like, yes, I was cheering because just hearing that priest like say all these terrible things made me so angry, to where like when he finally met like his demise in a very violent way, I wasn't upset about it. I was like, well, you know, that's what you get. You're about to kill this kid just because he doesn't agree with you and he, you know, is not saved by your standards. So I thought that was an awesome scene. And then, you know, we see Tiana, who gouges one of the priest's eyes. That was incredibly difficult to watch. But again, I was like, okay, like not feeling sorry, not feeling too sorry for you, priest. You know, but unfortunately, one of that priest was not dead after Hank killed him, and then he shoots Hank.
Right.
So again, like, he's just some collateral damage as part of her story. How is that going to propel her and move her forward, knowing that Hank dies because of her, essentially, and then finding out that her grandmother died because of her, essentially? I don't know, like, how she can move on with that baggage.
It'd be interesting. Like, I would love for her to get to a point in her character arc to where the majority of her dialogue is not rooted in, like, pain, right? Yeah. So, like some actual exposition. Where does she come from? Mm-hmm. What was her childhood like?
Right.
You know, what is she like? What interests does she have? You know, like, I want to get to know the character outside of the mm-hmm. pain and trauma that she's experiencing. And I understand, I get that that's a central part of telling this story. Mm-hmm. But it's been complete pain. It's been either abuse, maybe her sleeping, like in the dark, more abuse, yeah. like dealing with the abuse, like talking about the abuse, running from the abuse, escaping abuse. Like, it's been that. It hasn't been much of anything else. So we don't really know what type of emotional pain, or, well, we do know the emotional pain. We don't know how that's going to linger going forward in her character. And, like, I think for most characters in the show, and just on TV in general, we're able to, like, kind of make those prognostications based on what we know about the character and the things we've heard them say. And we just haven't got that from Tiana. So hopefully the rest of this season, the last, two episodes, will be about her actually, like, living. You know, obviously she has to continue and finish the escape.
Yeah.
But hopefully it can get to a point where we see some type of connection between her and another character, like I said, outside of this pain. Speaking of pain, imagine you just got out of the shower in your nice robe and got some nice company over, outside of your wife and children.
That was my thought too. I was like, Banner, like, he didn't move his wife into the house. He kept it for himself and hookers. I was like, okay. Great,
man. Pride.
That's, yeah, sorry, pride. Continue.
Pride cometh before the fall. They say money doesn't change you, it makes you what you already were. And Banner, so we cut to Banner. He's in a townhouse which is fully furnished and provided for him by Donald Whitfield. We see he has some company. We see he's hired two escorts, two prostitutes for the night. So what does it say about Banner? Well, before we get to the rest, like, just in general, this revelation about Banner and his interests, once he gets a little bit of money, what does this say about his character so far?
I mean, it just shows that he likes to have a good time, right? I guess. And he's not above, like, cheating on his wife. And, so if he's going to cheat on his wife, we know he's going to do, like, other terrible things. And, you know, he set up this whole ambush for the Dutton. So we know he's already a terrible person, but that was just a fun scene. And then just kind of knowing what happens after, and when, like, Jake shows up, like, that was just, I loved that scene.
So after Banner gets arrested, obviously this means that Jacob he followed Kara's advice to, handle this legally. So Banner gets arrested. His Whitfield hires a lawyer to get him out. And he says something very prescient. I hope I'm saying that word right. After the lawyer informs him that, that Banner got arrested, Whitfield says that was their first mistake, mm-hmm. right? I guess implying that, they should have killed him. How do you anticipate this fight going between Whitfield and the Duttons? Because it hasn't really fully come to a head. It's been, obviously Banner started it, but like as far as Whitfield getting into it, we haven't seen him go fully head to head with the Duttons. Mm-hmm. Like, how do you think this battle, this cold war between the Duttons and Whitfield is going to play out?
I definitely think it's going to continue to ramp up. Obviously, we see that they know who the judge is going to be, so it seems like they're going to attempt to buy him off, this Judge Rollins. But then also something Banner said when they were hauling him out, like in handcuffs and everything, he said, "You cheated death twice, you won't cheat it a third time." Again, that's kind of like his threat to the Duttons, you know, maybe like some kind of foreshadowing that once there's more violence, maybe one of the Duttons doesn't survive this time and won't be so lucky. But I definitely think like both sides aren't going to let up. I think there's way too much at stake for Whitfield. We see that he cares about the money and the so-called progress, whereas Jake, it's all about saving his ranch and doing what is right for his family. But I think even if he's trying to handle it the lawful way now, if need to, he will go right back to handling it in the old, like, West ways. Because when they're, you know, sitting around the table and discussing things, Jack is saying, like, okay, but what about right versus wrong? And mm-hmm. Jake said, you don't have to look at it that way. Like, that's not what you do. You are supposed to look at it as what is good for my family and what is good for my ranch, and let that guide you. So I think like that could come into play again, where he's going to be like, no, I still have to take matters into my own hands, especially if Whitfield isn't going to play fair either.
So we learn, well, first of all, that line that Jacob says to Jack at the table about, you know, taking care of your family above all, seems to be like the central thesis of the Duttons, like up until Yellowstone now. Like, it seems to be a origin for that ideology from them. But I think we learn a lot about Banner, a lot, just in this episode. We learn that he's somebody who craves, I guess, what's above him.
Yeah.
Right? I think part of his central beef with the Duttons, and we know this from episode one, a lot of the animosity that he spews towards them is that he feels like he's below them and that they put their foot on his neck, right? And people like him. So it's not like he's some populist. It's like, hey, down with the, you know, aristocracy. He wants to be a part of the aristocracy because, I mean, it's been, what, a few weeks or so? Like, he's gotten just a little bit of taste of that from Whitfield, and he's overindulging, right? Not one prostitute. A blonde one, a brunette. Like, the man indulges. Like, I'll give him that. But it's contrasted, like, immediately once he's in jail. Mm-hmm. Because Whitfield's lawyer is like, hey, don't talk to anybody, you know, basically we'll get you out of here,
yeah,
in a day or so, you know, 48 hours, whatever. And Banner is in shock. He's in disbelief because that's a level of privilege that he has never been able to enjoy.
Right.
Right. He doesn't even understand it as a general concept. So in one moment, he's on top of the world. He's threatening. He threatens Jack directly by saying, hey, you cheated Jeff twice. Yeah. Like, there won't be a third time, which, like you said, could be foreshadowing for Jack and his fate. Mm-hmm. But Banner is not, he's a man with no country. He doesn't really know what he is. What he is a, you know, poor shepherd, sheep herder. Mm-hmm. And he doesn't know much beyond that. And like, all it took was a little bit of taste.
Yeah. Right?
And, you know, overindulged and got those poor women beat upon, you know, for no reason.
That was insane too. And I wanted to get your opinion on that scene too, because I don't know if it's just me. I felt it was gratuitous. I think maybe the point of it was for us to see that Whitfield is ruthless and, you know, he will just, you know, he'll beat women, so obviously he's got to be ruthless. I think we already know that about Whitfield. I don't think we have to be told anymore, and we definitely maybe didn't have to be shown the scene.
Again, but said this, you know, female pain,
yes,
in service of
Yeah, what you were saying earlier. So I didn't know if maybe what your take on is it gratuitous? And then second part of my question was, is it like, does he seem more ruthless if he had been doing the beating himself, or if he, because he made the one prostitute do it to the other, does that make him more ruthless because he just wants to sit back and not inflict the pain, but just kind of watch it happen? I don't know. I think that makes him more sadistic. And it's kind of like what he's doing with Banner. Banner's the one that's going to inflict all the pain on the Duttons while Whitfield just sits back and watches. So what are your thoughts on that scene?
I mean, you could say impotent as well. Yeah. Sadistic or impotent. Like that level of sedition, I don't know. Sadism is usually, you know, propagated by impotent men. Like, so yeah, it could be trying to show us that, like you said, he's ruthless and he is not the person to mess with. It could also say that when it comes time to like actually pull a trigger, he wouldn't be the one to do it, which is why he's kind of subcontracting Banner to basically be his dog and to kind of take the, at least the physical bullets for this Cold War that he is found himself in. But yeah, like, and we didn't need that. Like that, right. It wasn't necessary, right? Like we basically meet these women to show that Banner overindulges.
Right.
When he gets a little bit of taste of anything, and that, you know, would feel is sadistic. Like, okay, got it.
I had a quick question. Did you notice the guy that went and told Whitfield that Jake was coming into town and Banner had got arrested? Is that the same guy that they had hired on for the livestock commission, or is it just somebody that looks like that redheaded, like Scottish guy that they hired?
I think they look similar.
Okay. I was like, wait. Is he betraying them?
Yeah, that guy was the one who showed up at the door. The one they hired. But yeah. Ooh, that would that would be a wrinkle.
Yeah, a little bit.
Definitely. So let's talk about the scene with Kara and Elizabeth, who are waiting for Jacob and Jack to come back from arresting Banner. Kara talks, I thought it was so interesting and really moving. It really says a lot about Kara, where she frames her letters to Spencer's kind of like journaling, right? Like she's kind of talking to herself. From there, like they start baking, and such, but what did you think about that scene overall? Like, and how do you see like this bond kind of forming between Kara and Elizabeth?
I thought that was a sweet scene too. I like the scenes with them. I think there's just something nice about Kara being kind and gracious enough to really share her wisdom with Elizabeth. She never comes off as being condescending or just kind of uncaring, whereas she could be, right? She could just see Elizabeth as, you know, this girl who grew up kind of rich, you know, went to school back east, doesn't really know a lot about what the hardship it takes to be a rancher's wife. But she doesn't take that route. She's really caring with her, really compassionate, understanding, and she takes the time to really explain things. So I really love just the chemistry between these two characters and the actors as well. And I love how she talked about, this is how I get my feelings out to Spencer. It's my kind of like release. And right, like in 1920s, there wasn't like all this talk about mental health and self-care and all of these things. But even back then, they were doing whatever they felt they needed to do in order to process their emotions. So I thought that was a really nice scene. And then, you know, they start baking and then the men return home and, you know, everybody's just kind of happy. So it felt kind of a nice little respite between like all of these like different violent things are going on around them. It's like this nice little anchoring thing to bring them back home and show them, okay, like there is a place where you can be comfortable and you can be safe and you're going to be loved. So I thought that was just a really nice scene.
Like you said, a very sweet scene. And Kara has been that way towards Elizabeth since the beginning. Mm-hmm. Like when Elizabeth was, you know, up in arms about the wedding being postponed, and Kara took great pains just kind of school her on the fact that, hey, this is what this life is style is about. Shout out to Millie Mill. Shout out everybody in the chat. I like that this scene just kind of updates us on the progress of that bond that they've been showing. Like Kara, getting them a marriage license, you know, Kara teaching her how to bake a cake, and like Kara, like, you know, exposing her emotions and, you know, the weight that, you know, she feels with, you know, that Spencer kind of carries over that family, or his absence carries over that family. Like, I like seeing this bond between them, because we really don't get too many opportunities to see, you know, a true bond between the women in the show. Like Kara and Emma, it was a attempt, you know, before Emma's untimely passing. But we don't really get much there. We don't really get much of Emma as it is. So I like seeing what I'm seeing between Kara and Elizabeth, which unfortunately tells me that Elizabeth might not make it. Kara's gonna bond with Elizabeth, or she's gonna bond with Alex. Like, I don't know if it could be both. I'm hoping that ends well. But man, Yellowstone has conditioned.
Or maybe that could also be a source of tension and friction season two, if Spencer and Alex come back. Again, like Jack has been told time and time again throughout this season, that we're just waiting for Spencer to come back. You're not ready to lead. You're not ready to do this. You're too impulsive. You're too this. You're not ready. When Spencer finally returns, I think Jack's obviously going to be happy, but I think there's going to be a lot of the friction of, well, who's going to take over and who's going to lead? Jack might be able to come back and say, well, Spencer, you've been AWOL for like 7 years. You haven't been back since the war. Mm-hmm. I've been here. I've lost both of my parents. I almost died myself. I almost lost my fiance. Why is there like not enough trust put in me to know that I can lead? But we know it's because he's really impulsive, and he's just kind of like, you know, he's too young. I think he's very naive. And then Spencer coming back and just feeling, I think, a guilt he's going to feel that he wasn't there, but then also like, I came back to save like Yellowstone. Like, maybe we need to do this my way. So I think those could be interesting avenues to take for season two. But I mean, I like all the characters by now, so I definitely don't want to lose any of them. But in true Yellowstone fashion, we know probably like half of them are going to need to go.
Especially the prequels. The prequels will get rid of some people that you like way more than the main show. I really do wonder how old Jack is supposed to be in this show. You can tell through like cowboy experience, you could place him in like 22, 23, but like he also gives off 17, 18 year old vibes. So like,
to be very, very young and just kind of, I think a lot of times they kind of make him be like the naive character to then have like one of the other more important characters come in and be able to like school him and like, through that, like school the audience as to whatever they're trying to, like whatever point they're trying to get across. So maybe like, hopefully Jack will grow up a little too in season two, if he does come back, just more stepping up, especially if he's gonna have a kid, right? Like, you can't be so naive if now you have to be in charge of this kid and, you know, get him to survive.
I hope he's ready for that. Speaking of ready, things we are never fully ready for. As we get to like the last 6 minutes of this episode, Spencer and Alex are departing the ship. They get their, you know, final goodbyes from the captain, Captain Benjamin Stark. and they dock in Sicily. Mm-hmm. Boatman, something else is some another ominous line. Boatman warns them about to watch out for the Italian mafia.
Yep.
As he's walking around with his gun, his Zorro gun on his back. You know, they make their way to a cafe after some, you know, light flirting, and Alex just continuing to be Alex and to be awesome.
Yeah.
So Spencer, you know, lets him know, hey, you know, when they book passage in a few days' time, Alex comes and sits on Spencer's lap very romantically. I thought Spencer was gonna like push her off, like, man, we're in the middle of a restaurant. Like,
right.
But it's Italy. and then they, you know, Alex's former fiance, for whom she left in, man, at this point, episode 2, 3, mm-hmm. left for Spencer, calls out her name, finds him at the restaurant. Okay, what were you thinking when that happened? And where does this go in the finale?
Was not expecting that. I thought it would just end like at that nice moment. I'm like, okay, like, thanks for ending on a nice note after just showing us like 15 minutes of insanity.
Yeah.
So I'm like, okay, what are the odds? But also, like, what are the odds on anything that's happened throughout their whole journey?
Yeah.
I think, especially if she recounts to them like the ordeal that they've gone through, I definitely think they're going to try to persuade her to stay. She's not going to want to, but I think Spencer might, you know, feel those feelings again of maybe like it's tempting fate for me to keep you. And even though like now we're married, like this is your last chance to just stay here and stay in your old comfortable life and be safe and not have to go through the ordeal of like making it to the US, but then like having to go back home and like fight this fight with me, because like we haven't even gotten to like the point where we're gonna have to be fighting. We've just been right. like traveling there.
Had to fight to get to the fight.
Exactly. So I think Spencer might be wrestling with some of that still, just because he has so many demons. I don't think he's just gonna be like, well, like we're married now, so I'm gonna take her. Maybe he will, like who knows, and that will be nice. But I definitely don't think the old fiance is gonna be like, yeah, dude, like let's fight about it. I think he'd just be like, oh, okay, like I'm just gonna go find myself another like woman. You know.
That dude looked heartbroken.
Yeah, he did. I feel bad for him, but you know.
I wonder how much of that is heartbreak and how much of that is just pride. But I definitely agree. I definitely think we're going to see like a re-flaring up of, you know, the demons that he's been trying to suppress, or maybe not even he's been trying to suppress. It's just that Alex has done a good job of suppressing for him. Mm-hmm. I think he's going to see that as like, I don't know about the final test, but one of the final tests. Is this something that he deserves, right? Like, because this has been a shitty journey. Like,
yeah,
it started off romantic and, you know, it turned almost deadly several times, right?
Yeah.
And I could completely understand him feeling like, man, like maybe this is something that's too good to be true and I just don't deserve to have it, right? Maybe like the fight that I'm heading into is best that I walk back into that fight alone. But I absolutely expect him, and I expect them to choose each other, continue to choose each other again. Of all things that episode could have ended on, I did not expect it at all. I have not thought about that Brit since.
I was more expecting maybe like some more violence, because the sailor, you know, had warned them about the mafia and like, don't carry your guns. Was like, oh my gosh, like somebody's going to show up and like shoot people again. And it's like the mafia. But I wonder if also that's kind of like some things that they're going to have to deal with during their stay in Sicily. I mean, who knows? Like they've just wanted to throw all kinds of chaos at them. So maybe they will be like fighting the, you know, Sicilian mafia next episode, and we'll just kind of see what happens there. But, you know, maybe they've heard about Spencer and how much of a badass he is, because apparently the captain had too. So
yeah.
I think, like we've talked in previous pods, like how famous is he that Banner was scared of him? He's pretty legit then, you know, if the captain of like halfway across the world has heard about Spencer Dunn.
In the middle of the fucking sea, like, hey, yeah. even I. Hey man, I don't live under a rock here. Like, what the fuck? Right. Spencer Dunn. Let's talk about the finale. Finale next week. This Sunday. What are your thoughts? Give me your top three predictions.
Top three predictions. Somebody's gonna die. We know, like, this got to happen. Yeah, let's see. Spencer and Alex are gonna like have some hardship, but again, like you said, they're gonna choose each other, and she's, you know, gonna be cute again, and they're just gonna be like, you know, no, we love each other. And three, let's see. I definitely think more like shady dealings from Whitfield and Banner and all of them. I definitely think they're gonna grease the judge's palm and, you know, be shady and like pay him off. So those are my three things. What about yours?
I think the Duttons are going to lose badly before they win.
Yeah.
I keep coming back to Elsa at the beginning of the season, where she references Jacob and says that he built an empire and lost it all.
Yeah.
And we haven't seen the lost at all yet, you know? Mm-hmm. So I think either that happens this Sunday in the finale, or we start to see like some major seeds being planted of the fall. Two, I also agree. I think that Spencer and Alex, you know, they go through some more strife, especially with the ex, maybe the mafia. But I think they set foot on American soil by the end of the
Yes, week. That would be great.
I think so. And lastly, I think Tiana reunites with her father, and they probably have to fight it out with the sheriffs, I guess. So, the lawmen who killed her grandmother. So I think those are the three things. I think that's what we'll see in the finale. But I think it's going to be action packed. We haven't got a lot of action outside of, you know, the rock that we saw with Tiana. Not a lot of cowboy action.
No.
And I think we'll see a lot of that in the finale. Any final thoughts from you about this episode, this season, the finale?
No, it's like I said, this episode was pretty amazing. Lots of different emotions. But now, like, I'm fully invested in the story, fully invested in the characters. And like you, I definitely do think there's going to be like a lot more heartache, especially now, because like in present day, like John Dutton is the only one left. So they couldn't have been thriving if they only have essentially one heir left. So definitely ready to see just kind of like more of the story.
Yeah, same. I hopefully, because this would mean that somebody probably, you know, died. But hopefully we get a little bit more clarity on present day John's lineage. Mm-hmm. You know, I'm rooting for Spencer, but you know, we've seen all of the Jack rumors, but I think we'll get, like I said, action packed, a very good finale. If one thing Taylor Sheridan's going to do, he's going to end off the season, you know, on a dramatic, you know, dramatic stage. So he's going to do it big. Mm-hmm. All right. So it's another episode, Watchers in the Basement, episode 7, The Rule of 500, 1923, a Yellowstone prequel. We'll be back next week. To talk about the finale, which we all think is going to be phenomenal. In the meantime, where can you find us? You can find us on Facebook. You can find us on Twitter, Instagram, at Watchers Basement. Please follow us, like us, review us, 5 stars. Please, 4 stars is for the week, all right? We don't do that week shit over here. Please, you can give us a 5-star rating, like I said. You can find us on Stitcher. You can find us on you know, anywhere that you get your podcasts. All right. For Marcy, I'm Tristan signing off. We'll see you next week. Look around, look over your shoulder. Your ex might be there. We'll see you next week.